Always the hurricane's blowing, always the population growing, and the money owing, and the sunlight streaming, and the natives steaming. I like the island Manhattan.
I know you do.
Smoke on your pipe and put that in.
I like to be in America. Okay,
how to top that? I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lope. Well, as if having won an Oscar, a Tony, a Grammy, and two Emmys weren't enough, Rina Moreno has received yet another big prize, the SAG Life Achievement Award. The star of West Side Story, Carnal Knowledge, and the classic children's television show, I remember this, The Electric Company, came out with their memoir last year called Rita Moreno, which instantly became a New York Times bestseller. It's now out in paperback, and I'm delighted to welcome the lovely and talented Rita Moreno. Now, I'm going to try to say your real name.
Okay.
Rosita Dolores Alverio?
Pretty good.
Alverio?
It's Rosa Dolores Alverio.
I didn't even come close.
Rosita is the diminutive of Rosa. It means
right.
Little rose.
Okay. So your actual name
that
is...
That was good. Alverio, my God. Nobody ever... That's why I changed it to Moreno many hundreds of years ago, because nobody could ever get it right.
And Moreno was your town?
It was my stepfather's name.
Okay. Yeah. I got that wrong, too. That's good. So I like to come out...
Zero.
I like to come right out of the box
Andy
with a bunch of misinformation.
Zero.
So how old were you when you came from Puerto Rico? Obviously,
I was 5 years old.
5 years old.
Yeah, and came by ship.
You had no English at that point? Or
none whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And we came by ship because we were very poor. We couldn't possibly afford airplane rides to another country.
Mm-hmm.
So we came on the SS Carabobo, which is a hilarious name when you see it or when you read it literally, because it means stupid face. Cara, face, bobo, dumb, stupid.
Is it? That's actually what it means?
Well, that's what it means, but it turns out, and I only learned this about a year ago, that there was a battle of Carabobo in I think it was Venezuela, and it was the it was a general's name.
Oh, okay.
So it's very distinguished, really, but you know, every time I think of it, it makes me laugh. And I thought, not a good way to start your new life in a new country on the SS stupid face.
So where did you land in America? What were your first digs here?
The Bronx.
Uh-huh.
My mom had an aunt, Titi, who lived in the Bronx in a ghetto, a tenement apartment, with two other families, and there was one more bedroom, and that's where my mom and I stayed until we were able to find digs for ourselves. It took about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed in one room with my mom.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to pick up English? When were you?
I'm guessing that it didn't take terribly long. It's a desperate situation when you're thrown into a class of children who speak only English. And this was way before the Puerto Rican influx in America, New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So there were very few Latino kids around when I first got here. And you learn so quickly. I can't tell you how long it took, because I'm 82 now, so God only knows when. But I know it was very fast, because I learned very quickly that the only way to make my feelings known was to be able to communicate
mm-hmm.
with words, and it wasn't going to happen in Spanish. In those times, they didn't give a damn if you spoke English or Spanish. If you couldn't do it, too bad for you. you were swimming upstream.
Now, you got started so young with singing and dancing. What came first? Was dancing the first
dancing
thing for you?
The dancing came first, because I used to dance for Grandpa in Puerto Rico
mm-hmm.
to records, Remember Records. Yeah, and I used to wiggle my little behind and, you know, jump around the room, and he just thought that was so cute. And I thought, well, I like being cute.
Right. You like getting applause and acclaim.
You know what? That mm-hmm. hasn't changed.
Right. Well, you usually get hooked early, and then you're set for life. That's what you're going to keep trying to get that again.
Any actor that tells you that they don't care is full of it. Are they kidding me? Come on. We love attention.
Of course. Well, now, you're... you were dancing first. What did you get some? What was your training like?
I went to a friend of my mother's who was a Spanish dancer. Her name was Irene Lopez. Saw me bopping around the apartment, and said, "You know, I think Rosita has a future maybe as a dancer." And took me to her dancing teacher, a man named Paco Cancino, who it turns out was Rita Hayworth's uncle, because she was a member of the dancing Cancinos.
Yeah, Rita
Spain.
Cancino, right?
That's right, Margarita Cancino.
Margarita Cancino.
Right. And so that started the whole thing.
Now, was she in any way a role model for you as a little girl? Or she sort of went a different way in that era?
You know, the trouble was for me at the time is that there were no role models for a little Latina girl.
Well, and in her case, it was the Hollywood factory, and they said, well, you've got to change your hair color.
Well,
you've got to change your name to Hayworth.
She was very fair-skinned. I mean, there's nothing exotic about her at all.
Right.
And so I had nobody. I had no mentors, nothing remotely like that. I have become the role model now, which is, what a twist.
So you better be on your best behavior.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Absolutely not.
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopez, and I'm talking to, who else? Rita Moreno. She has a new book out, her memoir. Well, it's not new, but it's now out in paperback.
Right.
It's new in paperback. Called Rita Moreno.
A memoir.
Mm-hmm. It's a New York Times bestseller. So you're taking dance classes with Rita Hayworth's uncle.
Uh-huh.
And you made your Broadway debut at 13?
I was 13 years old, and I played Angelina, a little Italian girl in a play that literally closed after one night. That was shocking. But first of all, I'd never...
Skydrift, it was called?
Skydrift.
Have not heard of it.
No
with
kidding.
With Eli Wallach.
Yeah, it was Eli's first play, too. He and I, and I did my first film with Ann Jackson, his wife. But I'd never been in a theater in my life at that point. I had auditioned for the part, and they said, don't come back. After the play opened. And I couldn't understand it. I said, what do you mean? Well, nobody's buying tickets, and just don't come back.
That was, in a way, a good education about show business.
Well, though. It was.
Don't get too comfortable.
It was brief and to the point.
Right. Well, now, you said you went in for an audition. What was that like? I mean, you were 13 years old. Were you scared? Did you not know to be scared?
Not really. It's so interesting. I wasn't. I did a lot of auditions, like all the kids did at that time. And by the way, when I was up for the part of Fran Drescher's mother in the series Happily Divorced a few years ago, I had to audition again.
They brought you in for a callback?
No, they didn't even call back. They were so happy that they made an offer that day. But, I mean, an 81-year-old woman audition, it's just, I don't get it. What is it with show business now that they don't think you can handle stuff?
Well, you know, sometimes they want to just make sure that you can nail it. You know, they've seen you in
your films. Because you're old?
Yeah.
You mean?
I mean, I wanted to be polite about that.
Oh,
but,
don't
you know,
be what polite?
Sometimes they just want to make sure.
I'm 82, and I'm glad to be 82 and
absolutely.
Still jumping around.
You are more than jumping around. When we were playing the song earlier, you were lip syncing, and you had all the moves still. Completely intact.
America.
I have to share that with everybody because this is the radio, so they don't know that.
Uh-huh.
So you had a one-day Broadway debut.
Uh-huh.
That's amazing. Then how did you wind up out in Hollywood?
A talent scout actually saw me perform at a dance school recital. He was a talent scout. Imagine that. I mean, that happened in those days. He was with MGM, which was the studio of my dreams, or any kid's dreams who sang and danced, because MGM had the great musicals.
Right.
They had the great musical artists there. And he gave my mother his card after he saw me dance. I was dancing a Spanish dance with castanets, which, by the way, I still play. And he said to my mom, now's not the time, but I will be in touch with you now and then. And when the time is right, I'm going to call you because I think Rosita would be good material for MGM Studios.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine I just wet my knickers. Oh, God, was I thrilled.
So were you...
Then about 6 months later, maybe it was a year later, I don't remember, he called up and he said to my mother, Mr. Louis B. Mayer of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer is going to be in town and I would like Rosita to meet him.
How'd that go?
Fabulous. I was trying very hard to look like Elizabeth Taylor since I didn't have a role model. I chose her.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just from the cover of your book, which I have in hardcover here, You actually, this is a studio shot from the...
That was an attempt.
You
to
look quite
like
a bit like Elizabeth Taylor in this shot.
How
I've got
interesting.
To say. But
That's why the publishers chose it. And I frankly don't see it, but everyone else seems to.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Anyway, he looked at me, and I came in, you know, doing my best to look like her. And he said, the first thing he said was, "My God, she looks like a Spanish Elizabeth Taylor."
Well done.
Wow.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, for a while.
For a while. Well, now you were, I didn't realize this because I've seen the movie a bunch of times, but you're in a small role, and I didn't know it was you, but you're in Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain, yeah. Zelda Zander.
Yeah. What's the extent of your part in that film?
I have three scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But what was wonderful about it is that I wore a bright red wig, and I was playing a non-stereotypical role, and I thought, oh, wow.
Non-stereotypical meaning non-ethnic.
Dusky maiden, mm-hmm. because that my life was filled with dusky maidens of every possible nationality. And I thought, okay, it's done. I never have to do that again. And boy, was I wrong.
So that was like a false dawn, because
yeah.
then you were thrust back into that again.
Right, so, back into it.
So
yeah.
what were your roles like in the 1950s? What were the kinds of things,
oh,
the
Indian,
kind of dusky
Indian
maidens? Indian
maidens.
Do you ever get to wear shoes in any role that you played?
Very few
You're
probably
shoes.
Making a joke, but very
I'm not. I was
few.
Just I just noticed from, I read the book, and you're always barefoot in
yeah,
all these
barefoot
parts.
And
I'm not making a joke.
If I have any earrings, they're usually loop earrings or somebody's teeth or something,
mm-hmm.
and always long black wigs,
mm-hmm.
always very, very dark makeup, and always hiding behind bushes and stuff. Indian maidens, I play buckskins up the wazoo.
And did you develop a generic
accent.
Ethnic accent
I
that
did.
Would go
I call
work
it the
from...
universal ethnic accent.
Do
they all sounded alike.
Can you do a couple lines, you know, what
Well, you
what
know,
generic...
they all sounded a little bit Latina, because that's what I knew. So I'm playing a Polynesian girl in a musical remake of Pagan Love Song with Esther Williams. And they talk like these. And I had no idea that Hawaiian girls don't talk like these.
Well, maybe...
They all spoke like these. All of them. I could be Arabian. I could be an East Indian princess, which I played in a Robert Young... Father Knows Best thing. They all sounded like that.
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. And I'm talking to Rita Moreno, who is about to win the SAG Life Achievement Award. That's a big deal.
And it's SAG stands for Screen Actors Guild.
Right, right.
I thought I should say that because most people say, what is that? We're doing sagging lines on the face?
No, it's a big deal with Screen Actors Guild. It's now merged with AFTRA, right? Isn't it SAG-AFTRA
yes.
now?
Yeah, AFTRA is the union
television,
for TV.
TV and radio
yeah.
artists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she has her book, her memoir, Rita Moreno, is now out in paperback. And it's in a Spanish language edition, too, isn't it?
Also,
right?
It's in Spanish. That was very necessary if I was going to write a book about my life.
Now,
and I have to tell you that it's so appreciated by people who don't speak English well.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Now, there was another thing that came up in your book, which I need some explanation of, is that you, in the 50s, you were on the cover of Life magazine.
Yeah, 1954.
And the cover blurb was, Rita Moreno, an actress's catalog of sex and innocence.
I know.
What does that, I mean, I understand the sex
Who
sells.
Who the hell knows?
They needed, what was that
they
catalog?
They needed a hook. They saw pictures of me doing something else, and they wanted to do a story on a young actress in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally what it is. Mm-hmm. And so they had to find a way to make this story feasible. You know, why is it in Life magazine? Because it was about three pages. So the catalog, ostensibly, is me playing different roles for the camera, for the still camera.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it was.
Mm-hmm.
The sexy girl, the innocent girl.
Oh, I see.
The one with the tears in her eyes, the one being interviewed by a mogul who wants a job desperately, that kind of thing. It was the weakest
It was
excuse.
A stagey.
Oh, my yeah. dear. It was the weakest excuse for a layout, but it got me a contract at 20th Century Fox. Those things happened in those times.
Now tell me, because I'm sure our listeners want to hear this whole saga, how West Side Story came about and what that experience was like for you.
I met Jerome Robbins when he was choreographing The King and I. And when West Side Story came up, mine was the first name he came up with for the film.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, let's have her come in and audition. So I auditioned. I did a scene, and I did a song, and they were very happy with that. And then Jerry said, okay, now you got to do a dance audition, because if you don't cut that, you don't get the part. And I really wanted this part. And I called a girlfriend who had played Anita on the road in a bus and truck company. And I said, teach me some steps. Because I had not danced at that time for at least 15 years.
Because you'd been doing all these parts in Hollywood
right.
movies.
I've been playing all these dusky maidens. Right.
Yes.
So she taught me some steps from America and some steps from the Mambo at the gym. And luckily, those were the steps I was taught for the audition. You know, when you go into a dance audition, you don't know the steps.
Right.
You have to put them together and then do them back at the dance director with style and verve. So I did that truly with my heart in my throat. And it turned out that he gave me the same steps that this girl gave me. And what was so funny about it, I found years later, is that when Jerome Robbins called him, said, how did she do? He said, well, I think she needs a lot of help. But she has enormous vivacity and energy, and she's cute, and she's funny, and she can dance. She's not terrific, though. And he said, but what's really fascinating about her is she learns so fast.
So you basically cheated your way.
I did.
You cheated your way. Well, that was good.
I absolutely did. I had a heads up.
That was a lucky, kind of a lucky break that she taught you those particular steps.
If she hadn't done that, I don't think I would have passed the audition.
What was it like working with Natalie Wood on that? Because Natalie Wood, of course, was, you know, an Anglo actress playing this Latina.
Yeah, nobody was thrilled.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I'm talking about the cast.
Yeah, no, I know. What was the feeling like back, you know, on the set, you know, and among the other people?
Well, you know, they kept that to themselves, obviously.
Right.
We weren't nuts. But we weren't terribly happy about that. On the other hand, it was a very difficult part to cast. On the other hand, they did test a lot of girls. And since she ended up being dubbed anyway, you know, any number of wonderful girls with big black eyes and dark hair could probably have done the job also. But the problem was Natalie was not comfortable with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly understand why. And she felt very out of her element, which indeed she was.
Mm-hmm.
And she never became really friendly with us. And that was a mistake on her part.
Mm-hmm.
She'd been used to being catered to because from the time she was a tiny, adorable little girl, everything was always, oh, Natalie, you're so cute. Here, what do you need, an ice cream? Well, look at you. Aren't you pretty? You're such a little doll. And she didn't know, apparently, how to reach out to these other people, the dancers. And it never became friendly. She wasn't rude, not ever. But she was distant. Let's mm-hmm. put it that way, a bit aloof.
Mm-hmm. You never got close to her.
No, yeah. No. We didn't feel that we had that kind of option with her.
Now, you won the Academy Award for this,
yeah.
this role. You were convinced you would not win.
Oh, I was sure of it.
Why?
Because Judy Garland was up for judgment at Nuremberg. She was in a hospital with all the cameras there. It didn't even occur to me that the votes had come in before that.
Oh, I see.
So I was sure
was
she was going
to... What was she in the hospital for?
God knows, but she was always in the hospital, right? But this time there were television cameras. This time was the Oscar.
Sadly,
this time
yeah.
she was doing a dramatic role in a movie. And I thought, I don't stand a chance, but if there's a hair of a chance, I want to be there. And the rest is history, as they say.
So what did you say? If you didn't have a prepared speech because you were sure you wouldn't win.
It's so embarrassing. And I know they're going to use that at the SAG Awards in the clip they're going to show on Saturday. I said, literally, I can't believe it. Pause, 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 pause. Good Lord. Pause, 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 pause. I leave you with that.
That was it?
That was it.
You know, if only everybody kept it to that length,
oh,
we'd be so happy.
No.
No.
You know, I immediately, as soon as I got into the wings, I should have said, on behalf of my people and my community.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
you had people to thank.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway. But you got a chance to thank them all at the SAG thing, right?
I've prepared that talk already.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And I'm not thanking anybody.
You're not?
Why? Who am I thanking?
You did it yourself.
Well, I did.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've never understood that, especially when they thank wives and husbands and and 3-year-old children. Mm-hmm. I don't get that. I watched the Golden Globes last night, and I thought, why are they doing that?
Mm-hmm.
When they could say something really meaningful, because these are wonderful actors who've won for great movies this year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Why are they thanking a 3-year-old child?
Yeah, they should just list the people who tried to thwart them. That would be better. That'd be more refreshing, don't you think?
Oh, I love that. Who was the one that
You'd
said I deserve this? Was that Shirley MacLaine who said I deserve this?
Probably. Now, your book is full of all this great stuff about your career, but it also has very juicy stuff about your love life, and you share in your books. I feel like it's fair game to ask you about it. You had a thing with Elvis.
I did, but that was just to make Marlon Brando jealous.
Okay, that's like a great sort of double axle name drop there. That's good. You got Elvis and Marlon Brando in the same sentence.
But that's like exactly
that.
Why.
So, okay, well, then let's start with Marlon Brando, and then we'll segue to Elvis.
Well, I had a very long relationship with Marlon Brando.
Right.
And whether it's juicy or not, I had to talk about it because he affected my life in many, many important and serious ways.
How did you guys meet?
We met on the set, on a set of a film he was making called Desiree, where he was playing Napoleon. Mm-hmm. Terrible movie, but he looked great. He made a great Napoleon. And I went there to do publicity stills at the behest of the publicity department because Emperor Haile Selassie was visiting the sets at 20th Century Fox, and he was there with Marlon, and they wanted to bring in one of their starlets, and there I was, and that's how I met Marlon. And he called immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, immediately, mm-hmm. like the very next day.
And how long did the thing with Marlon
About
Brando
8 years.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
on and off. Tempestuous, obsessive, and as you know or may know, with obsessions, they're very, very difficult to deal with. They're hard to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I tried to take my life because of this relationship,
mm-hmm.
I was still hung up. I was hung up for years and years.
You were just addicted.
That. Oh, exactly. You use the right word. He was my cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
I was his.
And it's weird to try to break an addiction with Elvis, but that's the way you went.
I was jealous. I was very angry at the time because I found out that Marlon was fooling around with a lady.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really angry, and this was not the first time. And when Colonel Parker called me, and do we have time for me to tell you about Colonel Parker's call?
Yeah, we have all the time in the world now that we're talking about Colonel Parker.
Oh, that was fun. I get a call. soon after this happened with Marlon, I get a call from this man who says, Ms. Marina, this is Colonel Parker. And, you know, I was tempted to say, no kidding. He says, I have a client named Elvis Presley, and he would like very much to meet you. Would you like to meet him? And I thought about Marlon and how angry I was, and I said, yes, I would. And we made an appointment for me to go visit Elvis at Paramount, where he was doing King Creole.
And, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And there he was. He was a gorgeous-looking young man. We made a date to go out. And we went out several times, and it was a bust. And I'm not going to say on the radio why it was a bust.
Well, I'm getting a sense.
It's in the book.
Okay.
If that sounds like a tease, I'm sorry, but I can't say it.
No, the book is great, and it's full of...
I mean, let's just put it this way. He was no hound dog.
I got it. Now you've left no doubt about what the problem was here. But we'll still read the book anyway, just to get the details.
You got it. Most people don't.
Well, you know. I've been to Graceland. I know the whole thing, and it's sort of a sad story.
The truth is, he was a very sweet, shy guy.
Yeah, he was.
And he didn't
sort have... Sort of like a child in
you
some
know,
ways.
Very much so. He was a boy, and
right.
I was dealing with this astonishing, sensitive colossus named Marlon Brando.
Right.
The contrast was, you know, was almost laughable.
Right. So it didn't click
didn't
with
work.
Elvis.
It didn't. Yeah.
Now, before we go, there's too much to talk about, but I have to ask one last thing about your career. I have to jump all the way to The Electric Company. Because
oh,
a lot
I
of people in the audience love that show. How did that come together for you?
I literally was invited by the Children's Television Workshop, which at the time was famous and very important with children's shows because it had Sesame Street. They produced Sesame Street. And now they wanted to go a step up and teach children to read. And they asked if I would do it. And I was, at that time, enamored of Sesame Street. Fernanda, my little girl, and I watched it all the time. I loved it, still do. And they said, would you do this reading show that this company is going to do? And I said, you bet. And everybody I knew in show business called me and said, don't do it. You'll get stuck with children's shows for the rest of your life. And I thought, well, that's possible. They said, you know, the Pinky Lee syndrome, you'll get stuck with that forever. And I did it anyway, and it only, I think it was great.
I felt
I was doing a community service. And I, you know, I'm a person who does a great deal of service in my private life, mm-hmm. a great deal. Mm-hmm. You just don't hear about it because that's not your business anyway.
Right.
But I'm thrilled that I did it. I'm thrilled that I met Morgan Freeman, who's going to give me the award.
Oh, how cool.
Screen Actors Guild Award. Isn't that great?
That's so great.
On Saturday. So, by the way, it's going to be televised.
I know. I've got the information right here. It's going to be on TNT and TBS on Saturday, this coming Saturday, the 18th at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, and then they'll repeat it at 10 o'clock, which I just found out.
Oh, okay.
Which is terrific.
So we'll get a chance to see you give a real speech with preparation.
Well,
this
they
time,
gave me
not
1 minute.
Oscars.
They gave me 1 minute. They forgot I'm Puerto Rican. You know, it takes me longer to say hello than that.
Yeah, you're going to have to really keep it.
I wrote it down because I thought I can't just do it off the top of my head.
On the other hand, Rita,
they'll cut me off.
It is live, so what can they really do?
Cut me off.
They can still cut
you
off.
Oh, they start to do that. The music starts to play, and you are dead meat.
Yeah,
one dead Puerto Rican.
Exactly. And on that note, I've been speaking with Rita Moreno.
A very live Puerto Rican.
A very live, liver than ever. Rita, this was so great. It was so great for you to come in today. She is, of course, the award-winning actor, singer, dancer, and author, and she is going to be receiving the SAG Life Achievement Award this Saturday. So check it at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock,
right.
TBS and TNT. Her book called Rita Moreno, A Memoir, is published by Celebra. And Rita, congratulations, and thank you so much for coming in.
Celebra is a Penguin offshoot, by the way, just
it
so people know.
It is Celebra from Penguin.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We're gonna turn it on. We're gonna bring in the power.